attention, please.
This is The Drive with Josh Graham podcast. Tune into The Drive 3 until 6 p.m. weekdays on the Sports Hub.
I love it. It's brilliant.
Newton's arch nemesis was talking and saying something nice about Cam yesterday. Panthers fans hate the Saints, and specifically defensive end Cameron Jordan, who has trash-talked Cam Newton on and off the field for years. Yet I was surprised to see Colin Cowherd inviting Cam Jordan in studio and Jordan complimenting Carolina Cam. I don't really know how to feel about this. I've been emotionally detached from the Panthers for years now. I don't consider myself a fan like I did when I was a teenager and even younger than that. But I'm all about beefs in sports and rivalries in sports. This kind of feels like how it would if you saw in the 90s one of the best good guys in wrestling. Maybe Dez can fill me in on who that might be in the 90s. Going out to dinner outside the ring with somebody in NWO. That's what it would be like, seeing one of the good guys in wrestling hanging out with the heels.
It had been like Crow Sting eating dinner with Hollywood Hulk Hogan in 1997.
Yeah, you don't want to see the bad guy saying good things about the good guy. You kind of want to perpetuate this rivalry. The Cam Newton-Cam Jordan beef is great for the NFC South. It's great for the Panthers-Saints rivalry because both guys are very similar. They're both flashy. They're both flamboyant. They both like to talk. They were both drafted in the same year. They were both first-round draft picks. They're in the same division. Both are all-pro players. They're both named Cam! It's kind of like the Dark Knight. Remember when Batman was holding Heath Ledger's Joker over the edge and he kept saying, "Me and you should get together. We're actually the same. We complete each other. You complete me. We're the same person to them. We're both freaks." That's Cam Jordan and Cam Newton. But if you missed the comment on Fox Sports Radio, missed the comment on Colin Cowherd, this is Cam Jordan talking about Cam Newton yesterday.
In our division, you face Matt Ryan. You know, as soon as you get a hold of him, you know he's going down. You know, it's not like he can just sort of shrug you off. I mean, that can't happen. You get a hold of Cam Newton, he can shrug you off. He can outrun you. He can then, as he's falling, sling a 60-yard accurate ball. I mean, he's probably the greatest sack you're going to try and get after, just because he's strong as Ben Roethlisberger. He's got, you know, accuracy like any other top tier quarterback. And then of course he can outrun you more than, you know, Russell Wilson can.
I agree with a lot what he's saying there, but there's just one spot that's just utterly false. Cam Newton is not as accurate as top tier quarterbacks. I don't want to parse things, but come on. Cam Newton's not Aaron Rodgers. He's never been, and that's fine. He's probably going to be a Hall of Fame quarterback, but let's not make him out to be Brady in terms of his accuracy. Running, that all checks out. Big Ben-like size, that checks out. Hard to bring down, I get that too. But this is a change of tone from Cameron Jordan, who was dressed like a Disney villain the last time I saw him. It was Monday Night Football. The Panthers lost a tight game to the Saints in December. It was the last game Cam Newton played last year, and it was the game Cam wore in pregame, the sneakers or the cleats that had a broken broomstick and a wine bottle on it. Cam Jordan, after the Saints beat the Panthers not twice but three times in 2017, sent a wine bottle to Cam, thanking him for allowing the Saints to sweep them. Pretty snarky stuff there. That's trash talk at its finest. But apparently someone else sent him a broom, and he wanted to make it clear, this is in the Saints locker room, that he didn't send the broom. And he's looking like a Disney villain, like I mentioned. He has a burgundy long winter jacket. He has, what do we call these spectacles? The ones that open the frames?
The Dwayne Wayne glasses.
The Dwayne Wayne glasses.
Yeah, from a different world.
Probably the best way to put it. That's what he's wearing with the frames open. And as he was talking about facing Cam, denying the rumors that he sent a broomstick to Charlotte and to Cam, he questioned whether or not Cam was injured. Remember, this was the last game Cam played last year with the shoulder injury. Yeah, he doesn't talk back to me. He just gets back in the huddle. He'll get up slowly, and he did the air quotes with his shoulder injury. And I had to jump in after that. I asked him, are you saying, what's up with the air quotes? Are you saying Cam Newton isn't actually injured with the shoulder? This was Cam Jordan's response.
He shot, I don't know. You say shoulder problems, this man, I grabbed this man. I'd like to say by the shoulder, and he shrugged me off. I'm just overly irritated.
That's him denying that Cam Newton's hurt. And the air quotes. I'm surprised. There are a lot of things I get out of the locker room. Sound I get in press conferences. Questions I ask that lead to interesting responses that get picked up and you know it's going to be a big deal immediately. Like when Coach K started asking me to come up with new basketball terminology that's going to follow Zion Williamson the rest of his career. Dabo Sweeney saying that it was a troll when he had the play card with the laptop on it when they beat NC State last year. Cam Newton talking about that drip. Owner David Tepper wearing the hat before I asked him about that. This was one I thought was going to explode, and no one seemed to care. This beef here, it's real. Cam Jordan and Cam Newton. And it's dated. Or I should say, it's storied since 2011. Cameron Jordan was one of the first players to make fun of Cam Newton's dabbing and his dancing and his celebrating and his outfits and his hats. Then you have the broomstick rumors. Him sending the wine bottle, those comments you just heard, him denying the fact that Cam Newton was injured, and now he's coming out saying nice things about Cam? Come on! On Twitter at SportsHubTriad if you want to chime in that way. The Drive is broadcast live in the law offices of Timothy D. Wellborn Studios. If you want to learn more about the ways they can help you, find them online. It's simple. At timwellborn.com, you'll know when you need us. The only position groups that would make a beef better than a quarterback going up against a defensive lineman, probably wide receiver, corner. Those two racing upfield, jumping up for a 50-50 ball, or even though they don't face each other face-to-face on the field, quarterback to quarterback. Those are the biggest names in the sports. They're the biggest stars in the sport. If you have a beef between two quarterbacks, whew, that's going to be a media circus. Have we seen many of those?
I was just about to ask you that. Have we seen a quarterbacks? It's usually like a quarterback and like a
defensive lineman or something.
Yeah.
We like to perpetuate Aaron Rodgers going up against Brett Favre the first couple of times when Favre was in the division playing for the Vikings after leaving Green Bay.
Brady versus the Manning brothers.
That was pushed quite a bit, but it seems like Peyton and Tom are actually friends.
Yeah, it does seem that way.
I don't know about Eli.
Yeah, I don't know about Eli.
Eli took two rings off Brady. I don't know how close those two are.
Normally it's like on a football field. You're right. It's usually wide receiver, defensive back, because they're both on an island by themselves, and it's really the only one-on-one matchup you have in football. So I immediately think of Deion Sanders versus Jerry Rice, Deion versus Michael Irvin. All of those classic Revis versus receivers in the AFC East. So, I mean, it's usually that more often than not, right?
It is, but there just haven't been as many great beefs between these position groups, at least not to the degree we're seeing even in the NFC South with Cam Newton and Cameron Jordan dating back to 2011. these two guys being very similar. Oh, we've got the Bachelorette minute today. Last night might have been the most dramatic piece of television I've seen in a long time. I was yelling at the screen desk, just yelling at what was going on. It was Fantasy Suite Week. Are you familiar with what the Fantasy Suites are?
I kind of have an idea of the concept right. of what's about to happen.
Final
here.
Three, final four. Contestants in either the Bachelorette or Bachelor, they get to spend a night together for the first time without any cameras or recorders. No microphones. So obviously you can imagine what goes on behind the scenes. But it's network television, so they're pretty discreet about it. It always presents one of the best hypothetical questions you can have as every man as it gets on TV. If you are someone who's in this circumstance, you're competing to be the to win the Bachelor or the Bachelorette, and you know there's two or maybe three other guys or girls who are going to be going into this suite with the person you're pursuing, do you want to go first, second, third, or fourth? Really, we're asking, first or last, what's the best place to be in if the understanding is intimate moments are happening in all four instances?
Yeah, when you have that part, I think I'd rather go first.
But if you're trying to win the game, you want to leave the lasting impression, yes?
But if you're...
You don't want to be forgotten about after the first one.
But if you're really good or extremely confident
that's
in
true.
What you do, then she's going to be thinking about you throughout the rest of the guys coming in there.
I don't think it is... a cleanliness concern. I don't think it is.
We really hope not.
You really hope
that'd
not.
That'd be a stain on the show for sure.
Literally. So you want to go first. I probably want to go last if I'm wanting to win. To be more competitive. I'm a competitor. I want to win.
I mean, if you go last, you're literally competing with the last 3 hours or however long she gets with each one. Before you walked in the door, I would think it's an advantage to go first and make a great impression, right?
It was so much drama. Fascinating stuff. And a clear favorite has emerged. So we'll explore that. But coming up, why North Carolina's case for an MLS franchise just grew stronger. This is The Drive.
One, two, three, here we go. Ow! This is The Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920. Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
A quick reminder that we're going to be broadcasting live from Charlotte tomorrow and Thursday. It's crazy to think ACC kickoff. The ACC football media days have already arrived. We're going to be speaking with Dave Doran, Dave Clawson, new North Carolina coach Mack Brown, Manny Diaz, the new head coach at Miami, and many others over the next few days. So be sure to be listening as you are right now on the Triad Sports Hub. ESPN's Roy Philpott now with us from ESPN, and college football play-by-play man has been covering all things ACC for a very long time now. It's crazy that we've arrived at this time where we're already getting set to do preseason polls and talking about football again. I like it, but it's just crazy to think we've arrived here, Roy.
No, it's good. It's good. It's that time of year, and you mentioned a couple of names there that immediately sparked my interest, especially Mack Brown and what a great job he's doing in North Carolina recruiting. I spoke to somebody at ESPN about 2 or 3 weeks ago that knows Mack really well, and they were just so amazed by his endless energy and just how he has attacked this job at North Carolina, and he hired such a great staff. I am so curious to hear and see what he does there in year one, and I'm going to tell you right out of the gate, Josh, upset alert week one, North Carolina is going to have an opportunity. The Tar Heels will have a chance against South Carolina in Charlotte, and I really expect that game could be a barn burner. It's going to be a lot of fun to see what happens there.
Whether it's because of his age or the fact he's been out of college football for 5 years now, do you think that Mack Brown is flying under the radar? Because after all, he's one of 5 or 6 coaches in college football active who have won a national championship.
I think every coach in the Coastal Division is under the radar because everybody poor mouths that division. as being one of the worst in college football. And I think we're going to all find out that it's not by the end of the year. That's going to be something to watch as we go through this season to see who emerges from those that pack of teams. And I think North Carolina's got a good chance to do it. But look, they lost a ton of close games last year. One of the games I called at Keenan Stadium against Virginia Tech, they were going in for a two-score advantage with about 3 minutes left. The guy fumbles at the goal line. Virginia Tech takes it the full length of the field on the ensuing drive, and they still won at the end. That happened like four or five different games for North Carolina. So if there's a team that is ready to emerge that nobody is anticipating, you got Mac Brown, you got a great staff, you got new energy, they're recruiting well, and they do have some talent. So I think that's a team to watch, and yeah, I think they're totally under the radar right now.
Here's the complete list of active head coaches in college football who have won a national championship. Of course, Dabo Sweeney, who won his second earlier this year with the Tigers, Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher at Florida State, who's now at Texas A&M, Les Miles, who's back in college football with Kansas, and Mac Brown. Now that Urban Meyer's out of college football, that's the list. Five coaches who have won national championships among active coaches. Another coach in the Coastal who's going to be stepping in is Manny Diaz, who takes over for Mark Richt. And you have Virginia Tech, Miami, and Florida State all having down years last year. So I'm interested in your mind, who do you trust most to bounce back this fall out of those three schools?
Miami, because I like their schedule. Manny Diaz, I remember when he was the safeties coach at NC State back in the day, got to know him a little bit. And he has really, I think, sparked new life into that program. And it's amazing how quickly Miami turned things around after winning the Coastal Division. And last year, they just were lifeless. That's not going to be an issue this season. He also was recruiting, I think, at a very high level down at the U. And Miami is the team that has the athletes. And that's easy to say because everybody always says it. But just go back and watch and what they've done the last 2 years in totality. And the division overall in the Coastal, I think it's there for the taking for a UNC or for Miami to make a significant run. Virginia Tech, I just don't know if the skill position players are there, and I like Dustin Puente. I think he's a great fit in Blacksburg, but something just appears to be missing right now, and I don't know that they've had the true answer they've needed at quarterback, so I'm not believing in the Hokies, but Miami is the team with the talent. North Carolina with all the close losses, those are the two in that division that I think could sneak up and surprise the people. Listen, Miami may be picked as the favorite. I don't know who the media is going to pick in the Coastal Division as the favorite this week. But it may be the Hurricanes, so maybe it's just silly to think that they're under the radar. They're going to surprise when they're the team that everybody's going to pick to win the division.
I probably think Virginia Tech. It's either Virginia Tech or Miami, only because even though the schedule's a little bit more difficult with Virginia Tech, I think Justin Fuente is the most proven coach out of Willie Taggart and Manny Diaz. And last year, it just seems like an aberration when you consider it's the first losing year since the George H.W. Bush administration for the Hokies, and they returned just three starters on defense a year ago, and they also had all those injuries, ineligibilities, and dismissals, and an injured quarterback to boot. That just seems like to me, since Justin Fuente brought the Hokies to an ACC championship game in his first year, that seems the most like an aberration out of the three.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe. And I think he's the perfect fit there. Bud Foster's doing his thing. And, the times that I had him last year, I always walked away from the coaches' meetings very impressed. And, you know, somebody's going to come out of that division that we're not seeing. And like you said, you know, there's going to be somebody that bounces back. I'm going to lean on the U. I'm going to lean on that team speed. They've got a couple of options at quarterback. And for some reason, I just think Manny Diaz was the perfect fit down there at the right time. And I think it was good for Mark Richt to step away. And, you know, we'll see him on the ACC Network this fall, so that's not a bad thing either.
ESPN's Roy Philpott with us here on Twitter, at Roy Philpott. While we were talking about Mac Brown, somebody brought it up to me last week saying, you know, Mac Brown is now the second most prominent coach in this conference now, when you consider Mark Richt and Paul Johnson both retiring after last year. Now that they're both out of the conference, would you go as far to say Mac Brown's the next best head coach? If not, who?
Well,
other than Dabo
that's
Sweeney.
A good question. I mean, I the job Dino Babers has done at Syracuse. I mean, Mac, I think the energy's there. The recruiting's been there. he's kind of partying like it's 1997 in Chapel Hill right now, which is great. But, hey, Dino Babers and the job he's done, I mean, look at what he's done against Clemson the last two seasons, including a win. He's been one of the few coaches to be able to beat Dabo. So I would go with Syracuse. They're a team that always seems to be kind of under the radar. And Dino Babers, they've done a good job keeping him there, given the considerable work that he's done in rebuilding that program. So, yeah, after this season, it may be Mac or Justin or somebody. But right now, I think it's a bit of a slight to ignore the job that Dino Babers has done at Syracuse. Everybody who knows him and is familiar with that program is just enamored with his ability and his personality, his charisma. And then, you know what, he knows how to scheme you. He knows how to scheme you. He's a brilliant offensive mind, and I think that really has boded very well for Syracuse since he's arrived a couple of years ago.
In terms of broadcasters, both on television and radio, you've been pretty close to Clemson's football program in the past and saw up close what Dabo Swinney has done to build it into the juggernaut it is now. Do you buy the notion that Clemson's level of dominance, this gap that exists between Clemson and whoever you perceive to be the second best program right now, that that's bad for the ACC?
It's weird because you can go back just 2 years, and the ACC, you could make a legitimate argument, was the best football conference in college football. When Florida State was still in the top 10, the year Lamar Jackson won the Heisman Trophy, I think if you go back to 2016, it just, you know, around there, the ACC rivals were beating the SEC rivals. Clemson was ascending. So, I mean, it was just really 2 years ago or so where it was a vastly different conversation, and there were three legitimate top 10 teams. And now there's Clemson and really everybody else, and you're looking at Syracuse or maybe an NC State crawling in the back end of the top 25 or top 30 teams in the country. And, you know, Florida State is way down. Louisville is way down right now. It's not good for the league. It's not good for the depth of the conference. I will say this. I think by the end of the year, the ACC is not going to be the worst Power 5 league in the country. I think that's going to belong to the Big 12 or the Pac-12. So the ACC, I think, is going to be better than what people are thinking. But Josh, somebody else has to emerge as a semi-contender for top 10 status in order to kind of reclaim just the brief glory this league had in totality a couple of years ago when Louisville, Florida State, Clemson were all there, you know, knocking on the door of the top 10 and the top 5 in the country. And it can happen. I think there have been some good coaching hires, and it's all cyclical to a certain extent. But, yeah, right now it is Clemson and everybody else, and that gap, even if the Tigers are played close by a team in league play this year, is still, I mean, it's significant at the line of scrimmage, at quarterback, at running back. From my vantage point, I don't think it's close right now. We'll see who can recruit up the fastest between Miami, North Carolina, and maybe somebody else to try to contend for that elite status in the conference.
I hold two truths with it, Roy. Number one, what you're saying, I agree with all of it. I don't think the gap's ever been this big between in the ACC since it expanded to 12 in 2005, between the top team and whoever is second. But the second thing is this, and this is what gets overlooked, I think. I think the middle of the ACC has gotten a lot better in the last few years. The very top has not, and there's been separation with Clemson. But I can't think of more than two bad teams in the ACC right now. I look at, I mean, Georgia Tech, it's going to be a haul for Jeff Collins to go in from Temple and try to coach a team that's been coached for the triple option with Paul Johnson leaving. And Louisville, that's a rebuilding job for Scott Satterfield from here in Appalachian State. But aside from that, like you mentioned, UNC, the energy Mac Brown's brought in, his pedigree, Pittsburgh going to the Coastal Championship game last year, Virginia bringing back Bryce Perkins and Bryce Hall, Miami getting Manny Diaz with that defense last year, Syracuse with Dino Babers, Wake Forest, three consecutive bowl wins, and they finished sixth in the ACC Atlantic last year. It does seem like to me, while Clemson is really building a gap between themselves and whoever is second, that the middle of this conference is getting better, Roy.
I mean, I'll give you that, and Virginia with Perkins returning, he is a total under-the-radar player, and that program is massively under the radar, despite shutting out South Carolina in the Belt Bowl last year. There's some depth in terms of, you know, mediocre to slightly above-average programs, and you know as well as I do, that's not how we measure conferences. And so Yeah, Bronco Mendenhall's turned things around at Virginia. Dino Babers has done it at Syracuse. Dave Doran, they're going to win 8 or 9 games, it feels like, every year and challenge somebody before falling just short of the mark. There is some of that, but those teams, two of those teams at least, need to take it to the next level to kind of get it to where it needs to be, to where it should be. And, you know, I think the ACC Network launch on August 22nd, I think that's going to help things along, and some of the coaching hires that were just made will as well. But, you know, it may take a year or two, or maybe longer, to kind of get back to where the league was just 2 or 3 seasons ago, like we just spoke about.
I hear you. Hashtag we do this. Roy, when's the when's the next time we're going to see you? Do you already have a TV schedule yet, or not so much?
I don't. We know our crew. That was announced yesterday. I don't know where I'm going first, but you're kind of checking email every 2.5 minutes this time of year, you know, when that's coming in. But I can't wait for it. It's going to be a ton of fun.
Roy, enjoy your summer. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, you got it, Josh. Thanks.
Got it. That's Roy Philpott on Twitter, at Roy Philpott, ESPN. And he's making it sound like there maybe the ACC Network, we might see some Roy Philpott, which I'm all about. One of the finest play-by-play men ESPN has over there. Up next, why the Carolina Panthers are bound to become the biggest story in sports in the next week. Keep it here on The Drive.
The champ is here!
This is The Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920. Now back to The Drive with Josh Graham.
See, Desmond Johnson picks the music on this show, and I don't even think Des realizes that this song choice really fires me up. While it is a great song and a North Carolina classic, Wagon Wheel, when I think of this song, I don't go to the Darius Rucker version. It's always Old Crow Medicine Show I play first. Jim Zocchi is someone who's been around in North Carolina for a very long time. I'm not sure what type of music he might be into from the Panthers Radio Network. But Wagon Wheel, are you a fan, Jim Zocchi?
You know, I am a country music fan, Josh, but Wagon Wheel has a high burn factor with me. I've just heard it too many millions of times.
But when you think about it, Old Crow Medicine Show or Darius Rucker?
I Darius Rucker, because that's the one I hear all the time. But I need to hear the original more, definitely.
All right. And another thing we need to keep an eye on is what's happening later this week with the Panthers, Amazon, All or Nothing series launching. I'm already seeing some local media getting a chance to watch it and talking about what's happening in this series. Other than looking for yourself maybe at times on the periphery, what do you intend to keep an eye on most when you watch it?
Yeah, I'm sure the fans are looking, you know, for me and Mick and the usual suspects, but they might also want to see what Cam Newton and Christian McCaffrey and some of those guys did. I just, some of the clips I've seen, I just love the just the cutting up, you know, Christian McCaffrey telling a joke, Greg Olsen explaining Hamilton to his teammates on the, you know, at the bench at a practice, and Ryan Khalil yakking it up with McCaffrey about being a fast white guy. I mean, I just, it's a lot of camaraderie on these teams every year, and guys like Ryan Khalil, some others have passed through that are not on the team this upcoming season. So it'll be fun to look back. And you know, we saw the cameras all around last year. They were at everything, obviously, and a lot of stuff we never saw. So I think it'll be just kind of that whole behind-the-scenes kind of fun, you know, everything from football to watching film with Luke Kuechly to them just cutting up. That'll be great fun to see all that.
How often were the cameras around, Jim?
All the time. I mean, truly, we, you know, being on the radio network, are able to go to practice, and then we'd see them out there, and then we'd see them at the press conferences, which everyone is media-wise invited to. But you know, they had full access to just meeting rooms, and you know, they went to Greg Olsen's, you know, kids' little league baseball practice that he's coaching and things like that. So we saw them, I would say, almost everywhere that we were going. And they were obviously in a lot of places that we never went, so it'll be a total all access.
Being in the locker room for home games the last couple of years, I started to think about with this series, stuff like this and Hard Knocks, it really introduces you to the players on a personal level, and you start noting Greg Olsen trying to introduce his teammates to Hamilton, among other things, Christian McCaffrey telling jokes. I remember with the Falcons a few years ago, Brian Cox Jr., he was the standout star in the Hard Knocks, and it's very rare you'd see a defensive line coach really stick out, but in a show like that, it really can happen. So I started thinking about, for Panthers, who might be a standout personality among the players that you wouldn't consider, like a Cam Newton or a Greg Olsen or a Christian McCaffrey, just given that criteria, guys who might be a backup or a lineman, whose personality do you think can really shine in the setting of this Amazon show?
Yeah, somebody like, you know, Dante Jackson's got a big personality, the rookie cornerback from last year. Again, we'll see how much is actually put into these eight episodes that is actually used and, you know, what doesn't make it. But, you know, he's someone that immediately comes to mind. He's got a lot of swagger, and I could just see him having, you know, a lot of commentary there. And there's stuff, you know, there's always this running thing between Thomas Davis and Cam Newton in practices. It'll be interesting to see how much of that makes its way onto that. They kind of had this personal one-on-one offenses versus defensive battle that was going out there at all times, which was kind of reminiscent of when Steve Smith was here. I mean, the practices were intense a lot of times, and there's a competition that, you know, spills over from training camp into the weekly Wednesday, Thursday press conference, or the practices, I should say. So again, TD obviously with the Chargers now, but just seeing stuff like that will be fun.
Jim Zocchi's with us from the Panthers Radio Network on Twitter at Jim Zocchi. I'm interested in this beef that seems to exist between a couple of Cams in the NFC South, where you have Cam Newton, of course, drafted in 2011, but later in that first round, the Saints selected Cameron Jordan, and it seems like these two are both very similar in that they're both flashy, they're both flamboyant, they're both talkative, they're both drafted the same year, they're in the same division, and they're both named Cam. But back and forth, you see Cameron Jordan talking in the media in the past, criticizing Cam for the dancing and the dabbing, and talking about the hats and picking fun at Cam and sending, I think, a bottle of wine, and he disputed sending a broom, albeit Cam got one after the Saints swept the Panthers in 2017. Yesterday he was on the radio complimenting Cam Newton, but it does seem like there was a lot of beef. There is between Cam Jordan and Cam Newton. Are you pro beef in football, Jim Zocchi?
Yeah, I think we need characters. That's what makes it interesting. And, you know, it's secondary to the game itself, but, you know, the best way to win those arguments and to send back the bottle of wine, and if you wanted to send a broom, would be to win. And, you know, that's your rival. I mean, that's the team you got to knock off in the NFC South based on the past couple of years is New Orleans. So say it's not bragging when you back it up, right? And that's what the Saints have done the last couple of years. And they've set the bar high in the criteria that the Panthers and Falcons and the Buccaneers, for that matter, are going to have to try to reach to now.
Jim, you've been with the Panthers Radio Network since the first year of Carolina Panthers football. How long have you lived in Charlotte?
Going back to 1987.
Okay, so I don't think there are many people who probably have a better pulse on the sports scene in Charlotte than you. And I wonder, when you see David Tepper hiring Tom Glick last year, you know that there's going to be some pursuit for soccer. And David Tepper even said it publicly. They get the meeting with the MLS, and then the MLS puts out a statement yesterday, and they included them among the teams that potentially could land an MLS franchise. So there could be MLS soccer being played inside Bank of America Stadium. Given what you know about the Charlotte sports scene, how much demand do you think there would be for pro soccer in Charlotte?
I think it'd be the perfect fit. I look at what Raleigh area has with the Carolina Hurricanes, and it would just be something that's different. You know, we've all grown up with football, basketball, especially here around the ACC areas like that. But this, again, millennials, generational, really seem to have a strong attraction to soccer. And that's why you see it's going to Austin. It's going to Nashville. It's going to go to probably St. Louis and probably Sacramento for that matter, Miami. So basically you're vying for one. And I think for the Charlotte area, I mean, because there's been such a rich history of collegiate soccer in this area with the ACC teams and UNC Charlotte and Davidson, there's an appetite for it. I think it's, you know, beyond that, Josh, is an appetite for something new that is their own generationally for the younger folks. You know, like we're like a lot of places like Yarlipa and Greensboro and Winston-Salem area and all that, craft beer and soccer, I mean, it's a little bit different. You know, we grew up, we had Coors Light and Miller Light and Pabst. We didn't have a lot of choices, you know, beer choices, sport choices. All those things are evolving and changing, and I think it's something that would be the perfect fit for this city as something to complement the Hornets and the Panthers and the AAA Charlotte Knights baseball team here.
What do you think the most attractive element of Charlotte is if they're going up against Las Vegas, which is, according to some of the reports out there, if it is a 30th spot, it might be Charlotte versus Vegas. Is it the owner and how much he's worth in the NFL, somebody who is an owner there potentially being in the same room in the MLS? owner room as well, or what do you think the big point is?
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to worry about fine at Carolina with dollars, and he's only gone up. I'm sure you've seen what happened the way they've had at times 70,000 plus. You know, seeing the Atlanta all of an NFL / soccer MLS thing that can work together. I think too, you know, this is a good ownership group that has a stadium already in place. You know, some places have to cobble together the money. I know in Raleigh they're talking about putting something together. St. Louis is looking to build a 22,000 seat stadium. You know, that stuff either has to be secured or it's just being talked about and dreamt about. You know, there is a football stadium in place that could house soccer. I think having the stadium that's been updated year after year, I think having an owner with deep pockets and being in an attractive, growing millennial-type market are all things that are factoring in a positive way for Charlotte.
Jim, when you're in Spartanburg, South Carolina, what do you do for fun?
Look for shade because it's really hot. It's really humid. There's not a lot of it because it's a football field, right?
Yeah.
There is one side on the back side of the practice field. You enjoy that first practice that goes into the evening, the Thursday night one next week. So you enjoy that one, sure. And, you know, there's some great little local eateries. One of my favorite burger places on the planet is not the Beacon, which is a famous one, but Ike's Corner Grill. So if anyone's making a trip down to Spartanburg, Ike's Corner Grill, I'm not a paid endorser, but best burger I've ever had, and everyone I've taken there, nobody has disagreed with me. So definitely some good local eats when you go to an established town like Spartanburg is.
It's essentially here, camp getting set to start, and we're going to be in Charlotte broadcasting our show tomorrow and Thursday at ACC kickoff in Charlotte. Jim, I appreciate you squeezing in some time for us. Enjoy the last couple of drops of summer.
All right, yeah, it's every bit of it, 99 degrees or something today. But Josh, we'll see you down there. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, that's Jim Zoki on Twitter. At Jim Zoki from the Panthers Radio Network. Can't believe you were playing the Darius Rucker version of Wagon Wheel. When you think Wagon Wheel, do you think Darius Rucker or Old Crow Medicine Show?
I don't really think either. I mean, I know the song. It was
what?
Familiar to me, but I'm what? Familiar with Darius Rucker. I mean,
that song is a North Carolina classic.
I mean, I know the song. I don't really think about who's singing it. I would prefer the Hootie version, so I'm going to go Darius Rucker.
Oh, that hurts. I think
why?
I think there is a parade of people, maybe a mob, willing to disagree with you on that. 336-777-1600. Which Wagon Wheel version do you prefer, Darius Rucker or Old Crow Medicine Show? That's blasphemous. The Darius Rucker version. It won a Grammy, that version, which fires me up because, again, it's a cover, and there's not many instances where the cover is better than the original. Now, I'll give you Whitney Houston, I'll Always Love You, over Dolly Parton, but there aren't many examples where the cover is better than the original.
How many people even know that that's not the original? That the Darius Rucker version is not the original version of the song?
I think a lot of people do. In North Carolina. Across the country, maybe not. Which is why it might be the more popular version. But I like to believe in North Carolina, the land of the pine, Old Crow Medicine Show comes first before Darius Rucker. I want to believe that. That's what I want to believe. So we mentioned the beef between Cam Newton and Cam Jordan. It was weird to hear him complimenting Cam Newton yesterday on Colin Cowherd. Let's hear that sound very quickly. This is Cam Jordan saying a nice thing about Cam Newton, which is offsetting considering the beef and the rivalry.
You know, we have in our division, you face Matt Ryan, you know, as soon as you get a hold of him, you know he's going down. You know, it's not like he can just sort of shrug you off. I mean, that can't happen. You get a hold of Cam Newton, he can shrug you off. He can outrun you. He can then, as he's falling, sling a 60-yard accurate ball. I mean, he's probably the greatest sack you're going to try and get after just because he's strong as Ben Roethlisberger. He's got, you know, accuracy like any other top tier quarterback. And then of course he can outrun you more than, you know, Russell Wilson can.
Come on now. Cam Newton, he's not as accurate as any quarterback of the NFL. I don't care if you're the biggest Cam Newton fan out there. Stop. I'll say biggest running threat, hardest quarterback to take down. Russell Wilson comparison, Ben Roethlisberger comparison, great. He ain't Brady. Cam Newton isn't as accurate as Aaron Rodgers. He's not as accurate even as Matt Ryan. So get out of here with that nonsense. It's just weird to hear Cam Jordan saying nice things about Cam Newton. It's a little offsetting. It's almost like if the Iron Sheik was saying friendly things about Hulk Hogan, right? You would just be skeptical, a little skeptical. You are listening to WSJS Winston-Salem, WCOG Greensboro, WPC in Burlington, WMFR High Point, those signals making up the Triad Sports Hub.
This is where the magic starts.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
Showtime!
The Sports Hub at AM 600, AM 920.
Looking forward to getting to Charlotte. ACC kickoff tomorrow and Thursday. We'll be speaking with Dave Doran, Dave Clawson, Scott Satterfield, Manny Diaz, among others. We're going to have fantastic guests both days, and DG's going to be there as well. So expect great coverage of ACC football from noon to 7 o'clock, both tomorrow and Thursday, live from Charlotte. We're looking forward to that. I got an email about an hour ago asking for my ACC preseason poll. And I still have no idea, really, what to make of the Coastal Division. It's on our ACC kickoff bingo board. Coastal gonna Coastal. 6 years, six different champs in the Coastal Division. Last year, Pittsburgh won. They have a quarterback coming back in Kenny Pickett, but they lost four of their five starting offensive linemen and lost two 1,000-yard rushers. So I really don't think it's going to be Pittsburgh this year. Virginia Tech was uncharacteristically down. Miami, after its outstanding 2017 season, down, and Mark Richt retires. In comes Manny Diaz, though, and all reviews have been great. I look forward to talking to Manny Diaz in Charlotte because I'm just interested in this vibe that everybody's talking about. People feel like the U is going to be back sooner rather than later because Manny Diaz is a Miami guy through and through. It's an outstanding story. Miami, they were great in the 80s. Very good at the end of the 90s and early 2000s. Manny Diaz at that time, 20 years ago, was doing what I'm doing right now. He was a production assistant for ESPN. Right out of school, that's what he wanted to do. And then he pursued coaching and found himself at his dream job. Weeks after he was named the head coach for the first time somewhere else. He was at Temple and a few weeks later, Mark Richt retires. Manny Diaz coordinated a defense that was one of the best in college football for a team that underachieved. And as much as I like Miami, and I love this talent, and I like Manny Diaz, what I'm reading here, I think I have more faith in Virginia Tech to turn it around more than Miami and Florida State. Virginia Tech has a coach that went to the ACC championship game in his first year and did so while Miami was pretty darn good. And while North Carolina was coming off a one-loss season in the regular season in 15. I think Justin Fuente is a very good coach. I saw it at Memphis. He turned it around at Memphis. Something that was seen to be impossible. Almost just as impossible as it was to turn around Duke. And David Cutcliffe has done that. Justin Fuente did that kind of a coaching job with the Memphis Tigers. Made them a power in the American Athletic Conference before that, Conference USA. So he replaces Frank Beamer. He still has very good talent. I thought last year was an aberration for them. Almost in every stretch of the word, in every line of the definition, aberration, that was Virginia Tech's 2018 season. First losing record for the Hokies since the George H.W. Bush administration, 1992. They returned just three starters on defense going into the year, and they had to dismiss a player. They had two starting DBs rupture their Achilles and tear their ACL, respectively. They had academic ineligibilities. Their quarterback, Josh Jackson, there was question whether or not he would be eligible. He played, and then he suffered a season-ending injury against ODU, a game that they lost historically, a historically bad loss for Virginia Tech. It all went to hell. They still went to a bowl game and nearly beat Cincinnati. So with that whirlwind of circumstances working against Virginia Tech, I can't help but believe that with Bud Foster coordinating a defense and him actually having players returning this time around and Justin Fuente being the coach and pressing the right buttons offensively, they're going to bounce back. Miami has the most talent, the best defense, and the easiest schedule facing Virginia and Virginia Tech at home, opening the year in out of conference competition. They're facing Florida. That's going to be essentially a home game for Miami, even though I understand it's at a neutral site. Virginia Tech, meanwhile, has to go to Miami, has to go to Boston College to open the year, has to go to Notre Dame, even though that's not a conference game. Notre Dame plays a number of ACC teams each year, and they have to go to Virginia. You could argue those are the four most difficult games on Virginia Tech's schedule, and they're all on the road. Still, I value coaching so much that I'd be willing to overlook that versus picking the unknown. Everything in my gut is telling me, pick Miami. They have so much talent. Everything you're hearing about Manny Diaz is positive here. But my head is telling me Virginia Tech isn't going to have back-to-back bad seasons. Justin Fuente is a very good coach. You don't know what Manny Diaz is yet as a head coach. So I'm going Virginia Tech to win the Coastal and go to the ACC championship game. Miami, I have them second. Virginia, third. Duke, fourth. Pitt, fifth. North Carolina, sixth. Georgia Tech, seventh. That's how I have the Coastal. In the Atlantic, you'll be stunned to learn this. Maybe I need the hip-hop air horn to accent this. My winner for the ACC Coastal, or make it the Atlantic, is Clemson.
Really went out on a limb there.
It sounds like you during Let's Get Crazy.
Ha ha. Hmm.
Who's second in the Atlantic? Probably Syracuse. They lose their quarterback, all-time leading passer Eric Dungy, but Tommy DeVito, as North Carolina learned last year, can certainly sling it, and it's a great scheme they run that's going to be successful whatever quarterback's under center. I think Wake Forest is going to finish third in the Atlantic. I really do. I like them more than Boston College, which lost a lot, even though BC is going to be hosting Wake Forest this year, and BC has A.J. Dillon in those legs back. And they have their quarterback in Anthony Brown. I think Wake Forest, returning a key player at every single one of their position groups. Quarterback, they have two guys. Cade Carney, running back. Sage Surratt, wide receiver. Justin Herron, all ACC guy before being injured at left tackle. Boogie Basham, D-line. Justin Sternad, linebacker. Kobe Davis, a leader lost in the first game like Herron last year. And you have a Sing Bassey. If you go specialist, Maggio's back. Nick Skiba's back. A lot is returning for Dave Clawson. It's hinged on being healthy, as all of this is. But I really like what the Deacs have put together. I think they're going to be the surprise team in the ACC. So I have them elevated to number three in the Atlantic Division. Boston College. I want to pick them fourth, but I can't trust Boston College still. I just can't. With Adazio to be better than Dave Dorn and NC State. NC State has lost so much. You lose your offensive coordinator in Eli Drinkwitz. You lose the guy who would replace him in Dwayne Ledford, who becomes the OC for Scott Satterfield in Louisville. You lose Ryan Finley. You lose your starting running back in Reggie Gillespie. You lose your two best wide receivers, Kelvin Harmon and Jacoby Myers. You lose your best defensive player, Jermaine Pratt. They lose all these players. How am I supposed to think NC State is going to be better than Boston College with those players back? I just do. I just trust Dave Doran. NC State fourth, Boston College fifth. I'm not sold on Florida State. I think that's a disaster. I think Willie Taggart was a bad hire. I have them sixth, Louisville seventh. Player of the year, Travis Etienne, not Trevor Lawrence. Etienne's stats were absurd last year. I don't even think most people realize how crazy Travis Etienne's numbers were. He rushed for 1,658 yards. And he did so on 204 carries. He was splitting carries with two other running backs. He doesn't have to do that anymore. Travis Etienne averaged 8.1 yards per rush. 24 touchdowns. Which means every ninth time he touched the football, Travis Etienne was scoring a touchdown. Those numbers were ridiculous. So while Trevor Lawrence gets all the attention because of the hair and the position, I think Etienne's going to be the player of the year. Clemson running back. Coach of the year. If Clemson wins every game, you got to pick Dabo. If not, maybe the surprise team in the ACC. Maybe Dave Clawson. That's how I'd vote it. That's my ACC poll. Your thoughts are welcome on Twitter at SportsHubTriad. You can find the Best of podcast available in SoundCloud, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play. The Drive, brought to you in part by our friends at Twin Peaks Restaurant. Pay them a visit. Haynes Ball Boulevard in Winston-Salem. It's your local sports lodge. Delicious beer, beautiful girls. What else are you asking for here? Twin Peaks, eats, drinks, scenic views. Up next, the biggest star in sports that you may not know. This is The Drive.
Dude, you gotta hear this.
Go ahead. I think I want to hear this.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham, the Sports Hub, at AM 600, AM 920.
One of my favorite athletes in sports is one of the biggest stars in his respective sport, and you may not know who he is. In fact, just seconds ago, Dez just said the first two letters of this guy's name because I think he wasn't trying to mispronounce the last name. It's PK Subban of the New Jersey Devils, who played for the Canadiens and the Nashville Predators. Is that what happened there?
No. I knew how to say his last name.
Just making sure.
Yeah.
Have you heard of PK Subban?
I've heard of him before.
He is flamboyant. He is fun. He is one of the biggest stars in the league, partly because he's very good, mostly because he's very good, but also he might be the best black hockey player I've ever seen.
That's why I know who he is. He's the black hockey player. There's only, what, like five of them?
There are much more, many more than there used to be.
So there's five instead of two? Or
no, there's definitely about a dozen or
really?
More.
Hmm.
For sure. I could think of a few right off the top of my head, but P.K. Subban's better than Wayne Simmonds. P.K. Subban is better than Evander Kane. He's better than Dustin Byfuglien. And for the Hurricanes, he's better than the two black players I remember them having, Kevin Weeks in goal, even though he was one of the interchangeable goaltenders on that first team that went to a Stanley Cup. It was Kevin Weeks and Artur Zerbe back in 2002. But P.K. Subban, better than Kevin Weeks, better than Anson Carter. He's very good. He has a great personality. And he's awesome on social media. This sound you're about to hear comes from P.K. Subban's Instagram account, where he is doing play-by-play since it is the summer. And a good time to put your dogs out in the backyard and have them compete against each other. He has multiple dogs, and they're eating at separate bowls. He filled them all up, and he has them competing against one another. And just the play-by-play itself, what PK Subban is saying, is very entertaining here.
We're taking it to the gridiron. Exactly, the grizz ass. Leo, poised, starving, just woke up from a nap. He's got a split stance going. He's ready to go. They're starving, haven't even had lunch. Bear, just waiting in the cut. Lucy cheating. Get out of there. Lucy Goose, I want a clean feeding today. No sloppiness, okay? Hey, get out of there. Lucy, no cheating. Ready, guys? Go! Lucy's off. Quick start. Sprinted off the line. Look at Leo. Little boxer in him. Coming out. Look at him working the corners. He's working the outside. That's a crazy tactic. Look at Bear. Half retriever, half chow. He doesn't care. He's competing. He's working the inside corners. Lucy. Let's see. She had a crazy start. Lucy, show me what's up. Get back in there, Lucy. She's back in the game. It's all going down at the Sioux.
Yeah. At the Subban house that's happening.
Why does he sound Italian to me?
I don't know. Just the first 5 seconds of this speaks to how entertaining PK Subban is. It really is just his voice.
We're taking it to the gridiron. Exactly, the grizzass.
Yeah. The grizzass.
He sounds like one of them guys that kind of hang in the back of the deli. You don't talk to him unless you got like an issue with somebody down the neighborhood.
It's very dramatic. His cadence there, getting people ready to go. I mean, the first 5 minutes of this, if you put it with the football music, it would get people excited for what football season's about to be.
We're taking it to the gridiron. Exactly, the grizzass.
Leo,
boys, starving. Just woke up from a nap. He's got a split stance going.
Stop it! What are you doing? Oh, the grizzass. Can you imagine Joe Buck opening the broadcast that way?
What a grovelly New Jersey sounding kind of accent.
Well, no, just saying we're taking it to the gridiron.
The grizzass.
To the grizzass. I'm Joe Buck, Troy Aikman here. No one's ever done a Joe Buck impression. You notice that?
I don't know if it's possible. Like, I don't even know how to go about doing it.
Let's
a Joe
go
Buck
to the sidelines, Aaron.
Nah, he puts a little inflection in there, but it's
touchdown
like
Raiders.
Touchdown Raiders. I'd have to study him. He's hard.
A lot harder than the others.
Yeah. He's not very animated.
Jim
so
Nantz.
Hello, friends. That's all I got.
A real opportunity for this team. A tradition unlike any other. The Masters. I do like the idea of doing play-by-play for other random things just around. PK Subban creating content, having his dogs, feeding the dogs, turning that into a game, play-by-play. It sounds like what you would do to waste time, like if you're driving in your car cross-country, some of the tricks you'd take, some of the tricks you do to stay awake or to stay entertained on long car rides. What are some of the things you do?
I play music and sing along like nonstop.
Oh, me too.
Like top.
It keeps you awake
volume.
To do so. I remember driving from Colorado all the way back to North Carolina. I had to do 16 and a half hours to Louisville, driving across two different time zones. And I remember getting on Highway 70, Western Kansas. So I went from Colorado through Nebraska and into Kansas. I got there around 5 a.m. Mountain time. Actually make it central time, I didn't get off of that Highway 70 until 8 o'clock that night. So a lot of driving straight through, and I remember just knowing I was singing out loud to keep myself awake. There was a Taylor Swift song that was really big that summer, and my eyes were drooping, my face was showing no emotion, but my mouth was moving while singing a Taylor Swift song, getting into Louisville at 10:30 at night at that point. 336-777-1600 if you have other tricks that you use to get into when you're driving long distance across the country. On Twitter, at Sports Hub Triad, you can contribute that way as well. Another one I do is sunflower seeds. So you're chewing them, you roll down the window, and you shoot them out your mouth. You shoot them like a projectile to see how far it can go, how far you could shoot the sunflower seed. Fun fact, you can't fall asleep with your mouth moving, so chewing something's always productive.
That is true. I have heard that before about the mouth moving.
Yeah, you just shoot it right out your mouth. That's how it works. Let's go to Scott in Greensboro, who wants in on PK Subban. Scott, what do you got?
If you want to know how comfortable PK Subban is, you need to see the photo of him he posted a couple weeks ago where he was wearing Lindsey Vonn's bikini.
Ah, that brings me to my next point. Thank you, Scott. Wearing Lindsey Vonn's bikini. The other thing is that makes him a huge star. He has a superstar girlfriend, and that is Lindsey Vonn. Probably the best Olympic skier the United States has had, at least on the women's side for sure. She just recently retired, but these two are all over each other on Instagram, and it seems to be a very fun relationship that they have. After she retired, she flew back 18 hours, and who was there to pick her up and to greet her? PK Subban. And this sound you're about to hear, it is the award for best boyfriend in sports. PK Subban, to paint some of the contextual clues here, surprises her with a special kind of cake. You're going to hear her describing something. It's a special kind of cake that PK Subban had made for Lindsey Vonn when she arrived after her career had just finished.
Oh, yeah. In the mix.
Officially
retired. Oh, there she is. Home sweet home. Oh, yeah. Look at her. 18-hour flight day. Still in the mix.
That cake.
Oh, yeah. The old billy goat.
That's epic.
Of course it is. You know how we do
this thing with the pink poles.
Bah! Is that a lamb or a goat? Okay. USA, USA, USA,
water?
USA. Oh, who's that? Is that another goat? Oh, babe, what's up with the gizzards? The gizzo kid.
It's pretty good. So the goat that they're describing is a cake. He got a goat cake that looked like it was skiing with pink poles because in PK Subban's mind, Lindsey Vonn is the goat.
The gizzo kid.
That's right. The gizzo. And then when she went to the bedroom, there was a stuffed goat on the bed. Or as PK Subban calls it,
the gizzo kid.
Yeah. I love him.
He sounds like a mid to late 90s like New York rapper to me.
He sounds more like a surfer. A surfer or a skateboarder. What's up, brah?
Nah.
Oh, what's that over there? Oh, that's not a lamb. It's a
the gizzo kid.
Yo, let's go. Let's go skate at the quad.
I'm hearing like Brooklyn.
We're hearing two completely different things. I'm picturing somebody with very long hair and shirtless with a surfboard on the beach.
You know how we do?
Yeah. We do know how you do. Great boyfriend, PK Subban. This is an easy guy to get behind. Who's now a New Jersey Devil, was just traded. Just very good player. In addition to being probably the best black hockey player I've seen play. Now, you could go back in the past and say, oh, what about Grant Fuhr, Josh? Okay. Modern day. Best I've seen play. I never watched Grant Fuhr play for the Edmonton Oilers. But he's great on social media. Great player altogether. Superstar girlfriend. Great boyfriend, it seems, too, and does play-by-play of animals on the Grizz-ass eating some chow. Big fan of that guy. A lot of things happening here on a Tuesday afternoon. Remember, we're going to be broadcasting from Charlotte tomorrow, and the Carolina Panthers are going to drop... Or excuse me, Amazon's going to drop this special in the Carolina Panthers. Amazon All or Nothing series. Scott Fowler, Jordan Rodrigue, they're already tweeting about some of the things that are going to be in this special. David Tepper talking about the signing of Eric Reed, saying, yeah, it's It's a little bit risky. It takes a little bit of fill in the blank to do that. And apparently Christian McCaffrey's quite the jokester. Quite the jokester telling some jokes. Has people on their side. I don't picture Christian McCaffrey being a very funny guy. I thought he was always pretty dry. But then again, that's just our interactions with him. He is wearing Bruce Lee t-shirts, it seems like, every week. It's a way for us to get to know these guys a little better.
I am very interested in learning more about David Tepper because I do have a man crush on him right now.
Really?
Yeah, I really wish he would buy the Hornets and just end it all. Just own everything. We talked about that before.
But a crush? Is it the three buttons down? That is kind of sexy.
It's just everything. Like how
three
he carries
down
himself.
On the button up.
It's
that
crazy.
Fading hair.
Fading hair? Does he have any?
Oh, I think he has. I think he's balding.
Got a little crown going on there?
Oh, yeah. Because you know that's hot.
But just the way he talks, the way he carries himself, just like he just feels so confident in what he's doing. Obviously, he's been very successful in everything he's touched. So I respect that. I'd like to see
some
behind the
scenes on him.
Are you
saying David Tepper should be the next Bachelor?
Maybe.
If he wasn't married.
Yeah.
Be the next Bachelor?
That might hinder his possibilities.
How great would that show be?
If David Tepper was on The Bachelor.
Yeah, somebody. How old's David Tepper? I'm terrible at this game.
Gotta be like 50-something.
I'd say he's in his 50s. Yeah. That would be my guess. He's 61.
Oh, wow. Wow, look at that.
Imagine if The Bachelor just went all in and saying, if David Tepper was single. Or maybe we could do this with Robert Kraft.
Marlene might not be very happy about Marlene Tepper.
Since Robert Kraft has already been all over the place with things, if they just went all in and said, all right, here are 30 women that want Robert Kraft's money, and Robert Kraft gets to choose between the 30 women.
I don't know if Robert Kraft would be down for that. But
you don't think so?
I don't know.
I think Robert Kraft would love that.
Especially
show.
Phrasing it the way you did. Here are 30 women that are here for Robert Kraft's money. So Robert Kraft, you get to choose.
I think Robert Kraft understands that's already happening with who he was dating most recently, who I think was in her early 30s.
No pretense or nothing. So like,
nah.
These 30 women are here for your money.
And then it's all a facade the entire season. You know, I'm starting to fall in love with Robert.
Oh, no,
I think I'm starting to fall in love with him. I'm starting to feel something here.
Have to take Mr. Kraft to the windmill.
Wow. Great recall from Dez.
Wow, bro.
Wow.
I pay attention to this show.
I'm very, very surprised you remembered that. But then again, I would be stunned if on a sports talk radio show, you forget the portion we talk about getting it on in a windmill. What do you got and take it to the house?
It's a choose your own adventure day for you, Josh.
Yeah.
You can either learn about the Varsity Blues remake or methed out alligators.
Methed out alligators. Come on.
I knew you were going to go there.
Yeah. Let's take it to the house next.